Great. So we've got Alice speaking to us now. This is a series we're doing called Living in the Promised Land. And she's actually writing a blog that goes with it. So it's on our website, and we've got just written the second one. It's kind of a 6-week blog to run alongside this. So that's online as well. Over to you.
We're going to start with a clip from a film with Russell Crowe in it, called The Water Diviner, and it was released last year about Gallipoli. And we're going to watch a short clip in the middle, and it's set in a barren area of the Australian outback. No, it's really good. So it's called The Water Diviner. Divination is officially dodgy, so don't do that at home. When you next want to find some water, just do some geology and work out where the water is. You don't need to walk around with a metal thing. But so we break any of that here, and we replace it with truth. But that sums up, I think, the DNA that Chris and I and many of us feel is an absolute non-negotiable, unshifting passion to unstop the wells in this nation of spiritual truth and connectedness with God. I'm going to read a little bit from Genesis. It says, Isaac reopened the wells that had been dug in the time of his father Abraham, which the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham died, and he gave them the same names his father had given them. So that is a picture for me about what we do all the time. We're in this barren place and we're just chipping away and digging and digging and digging, because we know that for 1800 years the message of Jesus has been passed down from generation to generation to generation, and that is the design and the DNA, nothing less than the increase of his governance and peace on each generation that comes here. And there's so much in this nation that is profound, that is really good, that is profoundly connected with having that inheritance. There's a lot that's been corrupted and exploited and destroyed, and of course we abhor that and we have nothing to do with that. But the fundamental truth that Jesus is the way, the truth and the life, and we connect with him, we enter into that fullness of life that the well and the water symbolise, is there, and it is in this nation, and we need to just press on to connect with that living well for our generation and the generations to come. So that's the thing that drives me, and that I wake up for, and I go to bed to be restored for, and I wake up for. That is it. That image sums up my vision for life. When that well's unstopped, then we realign this nation to pioneer again good stuff to the other nations. But that's it. So the biggest thing, if you imagine, that I struggle with is disappointment. I have waves of it over 25 years since this has first kind of grabbed me, of being absolutely at peace and at fine and contending, and then I would just hit these kind of walls of bitterness and disappointment that I'm not seeing what I wanted to see by now. So these kind of goes in waves, and Chris is amazing with partnering with me and standing firm for faith, and amazing friends who I process with and pray things through with and challenge me on the stuff in me which isn't right, which is out of alignment. And it sort of came to a bit of a head recently, a couple of weeks ago, and I friends challenged me, and I dealt with some stuff, and I was still not at peace. I couldn't get peace, and I woke in the night. Now, historically, I've woken in the night and had some sort of super spiritual, I must be called to pray. Actually, I just think I might have had caffeine before I went to bed. God just says we can pray or not. We can set our alarm and get up and pray. We don't have to go, I woke up, therefore I must be called to prayer. So recently I'm quite strict, because I always get really tired the next day. Years and years I had chaotic sleep and would get up and pray and do stuff, and then I would feel really tired the next day and have to sleep, which you can't do with children. So I was like, oh gosh, better just have a proper night's sleep when I can. So I now really contend for 7 or 8 hours sleep a night for the full, because I respect the boundaries and limitations of the physiology God's given me. And so for full restoration, to wake up to do well the next day. But this night, so I'm really strict, but this night I just couldn't sleep. And I was up and I was crying and I was disappointed and I was bitter. Anyway, I thought, I think Bill Johnson's written something on dealing with disappointment, because he had this really tough situation where his father was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and he was seeing healings from cancer, and he was contending for it, the whole church was, and it got worse and worse, and eventually before his time his father died, and he had a sort of story about disappointment. So I was like, I googled in the early hours of the morning, dealing with disappointment by Bill Johnson, as if Amazon could suddenly deliver it to me. Not even Amazon does that. Although, anyway, but I googled it anyway, and there were a couple of clips, one of which is 12 minutes long, but I think he says it better than me, so we are going to listen to the clip now and see how he processes his tools for processing, then I'll come back and do it and look at it more properly. Excuse the fact that I don't know who did this, but some people have put some cheesy photos. They are not mine, and I'm sure Bethel wouldn't do that either. But someone, whoever's put this online, has put some extremely, I think, not in keeping pictures with this incredible message. So we'll relax and listen, and then we'll come back to these tools in a minute for how to overcome disappointment.
And so I will go over these psalms until there's something that starts that I can hear. That's what I'm praying right there. That's my voice. That's my need. That's my cry. And as soon as I find that, I know I have found a well of refreshing. I may find other places as well. I may camp there for a day or a week. But this is where I start getting healed up. All right? Does that make sense? Now, I want to back out of that and take you a little bit more into a process on how to deal with disappointment. There's nobody in the room that has not faced loss, that has not faced disappointment. There's no one in the room that has not had baffling circumstances for which you have no explanation. What do we do? The first thing that I think is vitally important for us is to be absolutely gut-level, raw, honest with God. No religious pretense. We got to get rid of that religious stuff.
that religion that formats us into trying to be presentable to God, as though he doesn't know what's going on in my heart. Now, I would make a qualifier here. I don't think it's a smart idea to accuse God. Don't worry, he won't run and leave if you do. I'm just saying it's not a real intelligent thing to do. I know automatically if there's a conflict, the problem's not with him. The problem is never on his end. Are you guys with me here? I feel like there's a bedrock point of theology that without which you will be messed up continuously. And that bedrock, that point of theology that is so vital just to live in this world, is that God is good. There is nothing that hammers me in a good sense more than that one thought. What happened to Moses? He says, God, I want to see you. I want to see your glory. God says, fine. I'm going to put my hand over your face. I'll let you see the hinder parts, and I will let all my goodness pass before your eyes. We think in terms of glory and power, and yet it's all seen in the goodness of the Lord. The Psalms are constantly drawing us into the place where we learn to give expression to God, unrestrained expression of joy and celebration to God. Why? For his goodness. If that is not resolved, get it resolved. And the only way you can do it is by going to him. I encourage people to do this. Take time. Take time with the Lord by yourself. A church service isn't necessarily the right place or best place to do it. Get in the prayer house. Do something. But get alone with the Lord and be absolutely gut level honest. When you see stuff boiling up, circumstances brings crud to the surface. Anybody ever find that out? Circumstances reduces me to my real level of faith, not my perceived level of faith, right? Circumstances bring me to a true level of faith. It's revelation time when I run into difficult situations because it brings me to my real level of faith. And if I find stuff boiling up in me, unresolved conflict, unresolved hurt, unresolved disappointment. 5 years ago, I prayed and prayed and prayed. This happened. And I never really took time to get alone with the Lord to pray. My secretary, before Judy, my secretary was Karen. And she died of cancer here a few years ago. You've seen her picture up in the prayer house. It doesn't help to just kind of gloss over it. I mean, I don't want to go into a depression. That's not the answer. But it doesn't help to just... Well, those things happen. Because what's going on is there's this thing working deep inside of me where the enemy will use whatever I give him. He will look for a handle to grab where he can start feeding information into me, those fiery darts, to where there is a question, a case being built in my heart against God. And it will come when? It will come when another hard situation comes. Somebody close to me has some horrible disease. Suddenly, I find myself reacting out of that past disappointment. When you see that there, get with God. Don't make any excuses. Get with God. Lose sleep if you have to. Resolving that issue is more important than sleep. This is such a big deal. See, the Christian life is the life of short accounts. There's a 24-hour period. It's long enough to fix any problem. It doesn't mean all my circumstances are repaired, but the issues of my heart can be repaired in a 24-hour period. How do we know that? He says, be angry, sin not, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Take care of it before the sun goes down. You have the tools to fix this issue. Make sure that heart issue gets resolved before the sun goes down. Don't sit there and meditate and fuel this fire of anger, of disappointment, of loss. you fuel it by what you meditate on. Is that right? Are you guys with me? What I dwell on, what I think on, I can feed anything I want. If I have two dogs and one is real mean and he bites me every time I come into the room, and I have a dog that's a lap dog that's really nice, if I still have the mean dog in a year, it's only because I fed him. I can fix the feeding problem by not feeding him. Eventually, the angry dog dies. Is this making any sense? If you're having a difficulty with a disappointment issue, first of all, stop feeding it by building a case against God. Repent. That's where you start. God, forgive me. I didn't even know it, but I've been building a case against you. I have been working for the right to have unbelief. I have labored to justify my unbelief. I'm wrong. I've been partnering with a demon spirit. Forgive me. Deliver me, please, from that attachment. I renounce the spirit of disappointment. I renounce the spirit of unbelief. I will not let you infect my life anymore. I close the door that I opened to you. All right? There's the first step. Now, you get along with God. God, I'm still hurting, but I will not partner with that spirit anymore. And now you get gut-level honest. You be absolutely honest. It looked to me like you promised something to me that you didn't uphold your promise. Now, this is how I do it. I'm going to tell you exactly how I do it. I'm not saying it's the only way or it's the best way. I'm just telling you, this is my experience. I get alone with God, and I say, you know what? It looked to me like you let me down because I was carrying this word. I know in my heart of hearts that it's not you. I know in my heart of hearts it's something else. But I don't know what it is. And it just feels like I got betrayed. It feels like you could have backed me up and you didn't. You just get gut level honest. But here's the deal. You do not have the right to walk into the throne room, dump your garbage, and then leave. You don't have the right. You don't have the right. If you're going to engage in that kind of encounter with the Lord, bring it, be honest, dump it, but stand there and wait for him to respond. He may bring you a word. It may be in those psalms that you read. It may be in just a peace that comes over your heart and you realize, oh God, it really wasn't you. It really wasn't you. And it's okay if I never understand. This is what I do. God, I don't ever have to understand, but I sure have to have your peace. I've sure got to know that I'm at least, in your eyes, I'm doing the right thing. I'm not compromising. I'm not embracing something in my heart of hearts that is wrong. Are you guys getting this? It's just this gut level moment where you come in, you deal with the repentance issue, you confess the issues, you realize, oh God, I am the one that has been building a case against you. I've been fueling my sense of legitimacy, been declaring over my life that unbelief was legitimate, and it's not. It's inexcusable, and I repent. And then you come and you bury your soul before the Lord. You may bring up memories. God, I thought for sure that this verse was a promise from you. I thought for sure this that you said to me was your promise about this situation. Years ago in Weaverville, we had one of our families that she got unexpectedly pregnant, and the wife did, and so later in life they were going to have this child. It was going to be a son, and they didn't have a son. They had two daughters, and a great family in the church, and we were just rejoicing with them, you know, because they were all excited, and he was going to now have a son. So right towards the end of the pregnancy, getting ready to deliver, the doctors examine her, and they say, there's no heartbeat. This baby's dead. Oh, my, we just rallied as a church. We just began to lay hands on them and pray. We began to cry out to God for resurrection power and prophesy over the child, do all the things that we knew to do. It seemed that every verse I read in the Bible, I'm not kidding, I could go like this, open the Bible, point on a page, and it would be a resurrection verse. It seemed like everywhere I turned, it's the only thing I could see in the book. We were confident. As a church, we just declared, this baby's not dead, this baby's alive. We did everything we knew to do. The day came for the baby to be born, the baby is dead. Did not resurrect. I met with the church. I said, I don't know what happened. But in so many words, we will not accuse God. We've got to pick up and press on him. And we took some time one evening where we just talked about this to try to resolve what? That loss, that pain. Because we were there day and night. We were at the hospital. We were there in the hallways. We were praying. We were in the chapel. We were in the waiting room. We were just there, just contending for the miracle, and it just didn't come. See, where you have your greatest loss hidden in that which the enemy meant for evil is an invitation for your greatest victory. We have now had two babies resurrected from the dead. Two babies verified dead in the womb, going to be removed. The mother will die if they do not allow the child to be removed. And Jesus, in his mercy, has raised those two from the dead. We've had two that were reportedly Down syndrome in the womb. They were prayed for by people in the church that were healed, no longer Down syndrome. We had a child just earlier this year, had no fingers, had no toes, was paralyzed. The heart was not developed. The lungs were not developed. The child will live the moment it was born. Doctor saying, please let us abort the child. And the mother says no. The grandmother, part of this house, prays over that child. The child was born here not too long ago, perfectly healthy. Everything is normal. Where you experience your greatest loss contained in that thing the enemy meant for evil is the seed of divine invitation for your destiny. Blessed is he who's not offended in me. Did God cause the death? No. I don't know what happened. I don't need to know. All I know is he's good.
So I was really encouraged by that, and I did it. I firstly broke any agreements I'd made with disappointment and bitterness and rejection, just broke them, said, I'm not going to have that. It's like when you have a wound and you have infection in it, you just got to get the infection out. Dirt in it. You've got to get the dirt out and present the wound to God, but get the dirt out. Otherwise, it'll just keep coming back and get worse. So I broke any unclean spirit off me. And then I just utterly connected to my heart, and I just poured out and poured out and poured out and told him how I felt. I interrogated scriptures with him. I said, this says this. Why does this say that? And I was really frank. And I cannot say specifically what happened. I was crying and so on. And then just came slowly but surely, just imperceptibly, his peace just came. It just came and covered me and protected me and healed me and restored me. And it didn't change. I didn't get the why, but I got the peace and I got the reconnectedness, and it's still there. There's something about perseverance to get breakthrough. In fact, all the stories I hear about breakthrough have required perseverance. I cannot even think of a single story that hasn't required perseverance. That is the nature of breakthrough, is that there's a moment where we can choose, as in the case when they very sadly lost that stillborn child, where you just shut down. You say, I can't do this anymore. This is too painful. I'm not going to do this. I'm going to just withhold. I know you're there. I'm continuing to connect, but I can't do that anymore. Or you go, where else can we go? You have the words of eternal life. Where else can we go? That's my thing. Where else can I go? There's nowhere else to go. I actually don't think you can just withhold. I think you regress. And then there's these incredible promises that are attached to perseverance. Incredible. It's also translated endure or stand firm or persist. Perseverance must finish its work so that we may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Something can happen to us when we persevere that we never get when we don't. A maturity, a wholeness, a perfection, not lacking anything. That's in this age. It's not in the age to come. That's in this age. We can be in a posture where we don't lack anything. James, who says that, also talks about Job. The Job was a very wealthy, nomadic farmer in the patriarchal age. He had high standing in society, a wonderful, prosperous family, an incredible life. And everything was taken from him, everything, right down to his health. But he absolutely refused two things. He refused to say it specifically because he sinned. He refused to go into guilt and shame. And he also refused to accuse God. He didn't know, he didn't understand. We know, if you read the beginning of Job, that there's a two realms, and that Satan, which is a word for the accuser, the one who comes in to try and malign and steal, kill and destroy, he had permission to work. But Job didn't know that. He just knew two things, and he refused to move, and it said Job did not sin by accusing God of wrongdoing. And at the end, God speaks to Job, and Job is silenced, because who isn't when God really speaks to us? And everything's restored. His family, his wealth, his prosperity, his standing in community to a better resurrection, and most importantly, his own sense of health and well-being. And James says, consider Job. We consider those blessed who have persevered. So there's something about perseverance which attracts life in all its fullness and wholeness. And then that lovely teaching, that lovely parable of the sower by Jesus, talks about different kinds of soil which represent different states of the human heart. There's some soil where seed goes in and it's rocky and you can't really find a root, and others where there's thistles and worries of this world and the love of money that chokes things. And then there's other soil where the birds come and it can't go deep, the birds take the seed. And then there's that other soil which is good soil, where the seed goes down deep and it says bears 30, 60, 100 fold fruit of a harvest. And when Jesus interprets it, he talks about these are our heart conditions. And the one with good soil is the one who says he hears the word, and having persevered, through persevering, he receives a crop. The definition of a good heart is a one that perseveres. You just know that you know that you know there's something in it, and there are no other options to life. And finally, of course, Jesus himself. It says in Hebrews, the same word, he endured the cross. He persevered through it, scorning its shame, for the joy set before him of connectedness with us and bringing us the healing and wholeness we desperately need. For that vision set before him, he endured and then sat down at the right hand of God. So that's it for today. 2 Peter 1. He has given us everything we need for life and godliness, my mantra verse, divine power. He's done everything needed for us to live a full and well and complete life. Our side of the bargain is we make every effort to add to our faith, goodness, to goodness, knowledge, to knowledge, self-control, to self and control. And today we're particularly looking at perseverance. And then to perseverance, godliness, godliness, mutual affection, love. If we have these, if we possess these, if we grow in these in increasing measure as one unit, not as individual things, but we grow in all these virtues, then we will not be ineffective or unproductive in our knowledge or experience of him. So we can experience of him and not be fruitful, or we can experience him and be fruitful with that. And the way we are is our side of the bargain is we make every effort to contend for these things. And I would say perseverance is the key almost for breakthrough in all the other ones. We really want the purity that God has for us. We persevere step by step, bit by bit, marginal gains. I've come to a place now, I used to absolutely, if ever I felt I'd done wrong, I really, really toughen myself and beat myself up a lot. Now, do you know what? If I go wrong, I just don't even notice it. I'm just like, you know, that's not me. I've just been it. But I will celebrate that one half inch of movement towards the kingdom today that I never had yesterday. And that's the only progress that matters. That's all he looks at. That's all we look at with our children when they're learning to walk. We don't mind when they fall over. It's obvious they're going to fall over. They're learning to walk. But that one step they take when they're learning to walk, we are crazy about and celebrate. So we come into agreement, and that's how he sees us progressing into maturity. And we do it. Last week I talked about self-control. How do we walk from A to B? By persevering. By persevering, we'll reap a crop, we'll reap a harvest, we'll receive the crown of life, we'll be blessed, we'll be mature and complete. And look at that testimony. At that moment, they just said, we will press on pressing on, and other babies' lives have been saved as a result of their contending to persevere. So we get we process with friends. I think that's really important. Let them challenge us on our stuff. We get with God, we pour out our heart to him, we break off everything that's unclean, we clear out that wound of infection, and then we stay. Day, night, weeks, months, we stay until we hear his voice, because that voice will heal us, restore us, illuminate us, clarify things for us, bring peace, do whatever we need to be able to move on. And guess what the end result of that is? And for me, it's just greater intimacy with him, which is the whole point of it all. I feel more connected with him than I ever have. And that's because I went to him with disappointment rather than away from him. And he gives us the strength in that to persevere.
Thank you, Alice. Okay, we need to close and finish there. One of the things we love to do every week is pray for people who are sick, who need healing of some sort. There was a word today about breast tissue. So if that speaks to anyone here, do come up and it'd be great to pray for you or anything else that people would like prayer for, healing-wise. Also, while thinking about it, we're going to have Church on the Farm. It's an annual event we do in July, last Sunday in July each year. So that's the 24th of July, I think it is. We're going to be at Silas Nanny's Farm. And we'll do some baptizing there as well. They've got a hot tub. And so we have baptisms in the hot tub. We have a picnic and so on. And we have church in the open air with marquees and so on. So if anyone's interested in baptism, then do speak to Alice or myself. That'd be great. Okay, otherwise it's time to pick up children. And we're here again next week.